From NPR and WNYC, coming to you from the Bell House in beautiful Brooklyn, New York, it's NPR's hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Ask me another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Now here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a great show for you. As you may know, we have four brilliant contestants. They are going to be out here playing nerdy games with us, but right now they are backstage. They're all sharing their hot takes on the movie Green Book, which none of them have seen. And one of them will become our big winner. And this is our Valentine's Day show, everybody. Yeah, I know. I know. So my husband and I, we've been together 10 years. We met offline, not called real life anymore, offline. But I did a lot of dating when I moved here. I was on J-Date. I found it very hard, because on J-Date at the time, so you had your picture, you wrote your profile, and then you were supposed to put like a couple words under your picture, like a tagline, to get people excited to check you out. And I did not know how to describe myself in a couple of words. You know, at the time I was like, I'm in my 30s, I've kind of been around the block. You know, like, what do I put? So finally I just put, as is. A real fixer-upper, yeah. Hobbies include depression and making you guess why I'm angry. It's a fun thing. Do you ever have that moment in a relationship where someone's just passive-aggressively angry and you have to decide
what happened? I feel like that's most of what a relationship is.
That's what you do.
You think of new ways of expressing, but not really expressing your anger.
No.
And you gradually learn that the other person, what it looks like when they're angry, and you learn to ignore it.
Right. Just gloss over it.
Yeah.
On our show, we have two special guests on this show. We have amazing comedian returning to our show, Michael Ian Black. Michael Ian Black also has a podcast called Obscure, where he reads Thomas Hardy's book, Jude the Obscure, out loud, and comments on it. Which, this is actually the template for the future of American education. This is how people are going to learn about classic literature. They're going to listen to podcasts of classic works read by celebrities. That's how it's going to work. Homework is going to be like, listen to Jane Eyre as read by Post Malone. You know, that's going to be the thing. After that, listen to RuPaul's A Brief History of Time. We also have relationship expert Esther Perel on the show. Her podcast is called Where Should We Begin? It takes you inside her office where she offers couples therapy. And if you wonder, how could couples actually be okay with airing their problems and arguments publicly, well, then you've never spent a weekend at IKEA, or Costco, or Target, or in my bathroom while I'm brushing my teeth. My husband and I think we have the lamest arguments of all time. Do you have the same argument over and over again?
Yes.
What's the topic of your main argument?
Mostly it's hard to have a roommate.
Yes, it is hard to live with someone.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whether you're romantically involved with them or not.
Yep.
It's very difficult to share a space with somebody.
Super, yeah.
You gotta live and let live.
Actually, I think back at that. I did it all wrong. I love my husband, but on our first date, I asked him, like, what kind of music do you like listen to? What relationship do you have with your mom? Dumb. This is what I should have asked him. Do you put your crap away? That's what I should have asked him. You know, I should have posed thing like, you walk through the door, you have a jacket, hat, and bag. Walk me through what happens next. All right, we're going to have a great show, everybody. You guys are awesome. Our first game is about sick burns from famous figures. Confucius once said, silence is a true friend who never betrays. Unlike Marie... Let's meet our contestants. First up, Tatiana Vega. You're a senior analyst at an ad agency, and you've met some pretty amazing celebrities. J-Lo.
Yes.
Okay, so what were the circumstances that led you to meet J-Lo?
I worked downtown, and she was filming Shades of Blue. Mm-hmm. And I had a good friend at work who we would just have lunches about J-Lo, and he sent me a G-chat being like, J-Lo's filming down the block. And I was like, F this, I'm leaving work, I'm going to go find J-Lo. And I text my husband, and he's like, go back to work. Be a responsible adult. You're not going to meet her. And I said, try me. And I went. I asked the guy who worked at Craft Services if she was done. He said yes. And I just waited in this little group of two people, and I got a selfie with J-Lo.
Wow, very cool. And where is this photo now?
On all my social media.
It's on all your social media. Well done. Well done. Tatiana, when you ring in, we'll hear this. Your opponent is Sarah Favinger. You're a professional musician. Nice. What instrument do you play?
I'm a double bassist.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Are you one of these people that I've seen on the subway with your double bass bringing it to a gig?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do people feel the need to comment when they see you holding that that size of an instrument on public transportation?
I have, like, my own personal game of bingo that I play. I know what I'm going to be asked or what the commentary is that I'm going to hear. People always want to know if I wish I played the piccolo.
Sure.
Or they tell me that thing's bigger than you are, which I'm definitely aware of. And then my favorite...
You've never noticed that you have this...
I've never noticed that it's definitely 6 feet tall and I'm not. My favorite, though, is it's always a woman and they always offer to help. And I really appreciate it, but I'm like, I don't know what you could do, but I really appreciate you offering.
Right, she's like, I'll hold the bow.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to take that out of the bag, that'd be great.
That's awesome. All right, Sarah, when you ring in, we'll hear this. Tatiana and Sarah, whoever has more points after two games will go on to the final round. This first trivia game is called Haters Gonna Hate. Jonathan and I will read you some insults, disses, and shade thrown by famous people. And you just tell us who delivered these sick burns. While competing for the World Heavyweight Championship against Sonny Liston in 1964, this boxing legend said of his opponent, he's too ugly to be world champion. The world champ should be pretty like me.
Muhammad Ali.
That's right, Tatiana. Muhammad Ali is correct.
A German TV reporter asked this pop superstar about Jennifer Lopez, and she said, quote, I don't know her. Tatiana.
Mariah Carey.
Yeah, that's right. This one is a literal burn. At a costume ball in the 1930s, this iconic French fashion designer set her rival, Elsa Schiaparelli, on fire by backing her into a chandelier lit by candles. Sarah.
Coco Chanel.
Yeah, that's right.
This British prime minister once said, in politics, if you want anything said, ask a man. If you want anything done, ask a woman. Sarah.
Margaret Thatcher.
That's right.
This is your last clue. We may never know what then Speaker of the House John Boehner said at a 2013 inauguration luncheon that made this first lady roll her eyes, but the video went viral immediately. Sarah.
Michelle Obama.
You got it.
All right, great game. Sarah is in the lead. Our next game is about fictional drugs like runner's high. I'm going to get a lot of mean mail from marathoners. This audio quiz is called Side Effects May Include, and the points are doubled. We produce drug commercials for fictional mind and body altering substances from books, television, and film. Ring in and identify the source material. Here's your first ad. What book is this from?
Whether you're an alpha, beta, or gamma, social anxiety touches everyone in a genetically modified society. Ask your doctor about Soma. It relieves stress, so you can relax and have government-controlled sexual relations. Side effects include escapism, conformity, dystopia, rhyming words with porgy, and unbridled worship of a Model T Ford.
Okay, does anyone... All right, that's okay. Good way to start. Brave New World is what we were looking for.
Okay,
everyone feels weird right now. That's fine. Let's hear your next ad.
Is your journey home after a 10-year war and the fall of Troy feeling a little too... epic? Does everyone think you're dead? Try lotus flowers. Side effects may include amnesia, apathy, lotus flower addiction, uncontrollable weeping, speaking in dactylic hexameter.
Sarah.
The Odyssey.
The Odyssey is correct. This next drug is from a television show.
Keeping up with the cascade of cliffhangers and red herrings in a CW teen drama is a lot. Fortunately, there's Jingle Jangle. Side effects may include bloodlust, heightened thirst for violence, associating with people named Sugar Man, and being drawn to a hunky redhead.
Tatiana.
Riverdale?
That is correct, yeah. This drug is from a movie.
Sick of looking in the mirror and seeing just an average bad guy? Get into supervillainy fast. It's easy to terrify Gotham with Scarecrow's Fear Toxin. Side effects may include chaos, rioting in the streets, seeing bats when there are no bats, and convoluted villainy.
Tatiana.
Batman?
Can you be more specific?
The Dark Knight.
That's not the one we were looking for. Sarah, can you steal?
Batman Begins?
Yeah, that's the one we were looking for. You guys kind of worked together on that one. This is your last clue.
Forgot to eat before hopping on a boat for a really messed up chocolate factory cruise? Pop a piece of 3-course dinner chewing gum. May cause body to balloon and turn violet. If blueberry juice inflation lasts longer than 4 hours, consult your local Oompa Loompa.
Tatiana.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
That's right. Turns out after 2 games, Sarah is going to our final round. Coming up, we have comedian Michael Ian Black. He rose to prominence on MTV, which puts him in the esteemed company of Puck, Tila Tequila, and Johnny Bananas. Oh yeah, back then MTV didn't have staff meetings, more staff infections. I'm Ophira Eisenberg, and this is Ask Me Another from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kay Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from MailChimp. So, you want to grow your business. Now what? MailChimp's all-in-one marketing platform. That's what. It has all the marketing stuff you need all in one place so you can save time and money. And it's powered by a marketing CRM so you can collect, organize, and understand your audience data. All to help you market smarter and grow faster. Learn more at MailChimp.com.
The world is complicated. But knowing the past can help us understand it so much better.
That's where we come in. I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei, and we're the hosts of Throughline, NPR's history podcast.
Every week, we'll dig into forgotten stories from the moments that shaped our world.
Throughline from NPR. Listen and subscribe now.
This is Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. I'm Jonathan Colton. Now here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's time to welcome our special guest. You know him from the state, Wet Hot American Summer, Stella, and his podcast is called Obscure. Please welcome comedian Michael Ian Black.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for coming back on our show.
My pleasure. It's my favorite show on NPR. I would have said that no matter what show I was appearing on.
You know, when you were on our show in 2013, we were talking about that you, in 2009, kind of were responsible for starting the first Twitter war with LeVar Burton.
That's right.
It was the first Twitter war, period.
I think so.
And now, here we are, 2019, that's the backbone of Twitter and really our lives.
Right, but at the time when LeVar Burton and I did that, it was all fun and games. It was all good-spirited. and just a desperate ploy to get followers. Yes, it wasn't the personal vitriolic attacks that I engage in now on a daily basis.
That's right. Do you just love confrontation?
No, I'm terrified of confrontation, which is why I do all of it virtually.
Do you ever just want to walk away from Twitter?
Yes, and actually I have dialed it greatly back in recent months, and it has improved my life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so instead now I just play online poker. And
which you're very good at.
Well, we lost the house.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah. Well, you know, it happens. It happens. Now, your comedy group, The State. Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Love. You formed 30 years ago. A matter of fact, October 1988.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Did you have a celebration?
Well, not officially, but one of our members turned 50, and we went to Las Vegas. And you know what you do in Las Vegas when you're 50. You go to bed early.
You hit the buffet at 7.
We saw Penn & Teller. Their show was at 8. I think I was in bed asleep at 9:45.
The greatest.
The best.
The greatest. What a vacation. So over the last couple of years, you have also shifted gears, and you have written and spoken to serious matters, gun control, the Me Too movement, the state of masculinity. Not every male comedian is, I would say, stepping up and deciding to do this. So I am just wondering, from your point of view, did you feel like, for whatever reason, you had no choice?
Well, none of it is deliberate. None of it's like I'm going to speak out on this particular topic. It's, I think what every comedian does is you just speak about the things that you care about.
Yeah.
So I care very much about gun violence. I care very much about the state of our nation. I care very much about issues surrounding gender, because they're issues that I've dealt with my whole life and wasn't even fully aware of it until I started examining it and wasn't fully aware that I had been dealing with it in one form or another since I can remember.
But I'm very particularly interested in the stuff that you've been writing about the state of masculinity, and also you have a book coming out called A Better Man, A Letter to My Son, that's coming out in the fall. And it is, in a way, it's letters to your son who's about to go to college about, I guess, being a better man.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's as much to me as it is to him, in the sense of trying to figure out how to be better, trying to figure out how to live a healthy, happy life as a man and not inflict awfulness on everybody else. And it's hard work for guys to understand the that we're constantly depositing all over the landscape. And I'm specifically talking about white dudes here. And so a lot of the book is exploring that and figuring out how we can be better.
What is a piece of advice that you give to your son on how to be a better man?
The main message I'm trying to get across to him and to guys in general isn't so much that you need to be different than who you are, it's that you need to be the fullest expression of who you are, which means that so much of masculinity is defined in very narrow slices, which erases so much of who we are as people. Even though men have these rich internal lives that are filled with every human emotion,
yeah,
the way we express that and the way we are forced to live that comes out through such a narrow opening that we don't know just how to live as fully human beings. And when we acknowledge our sort of full humanity, then it becomes easier to acknowledge everybody else's full humanity. And that's the message I'm trying to get. Not that we need to change masculinity, but that we need to redefine it, expand it, so that we understand that we're all just people.
Right.
There is something really comforting and easy about saying, well, you're a boy, so you're going to be this way. And if you happen to fit into that box, things are very easy.
Sure.
A lot of us don't fit into that box. And so what kids are growing up with now is questioning the box and looking at it from all sides and examining that. What I hope we're going through now, culturally, and what I hope will spread through this country and globally, is a conversation that will take place that will make it much easier for my kids' kids to grow up and feel freer to be who they are, how they are, and to also be able to change as they age, if they so desire.
Right, and see that change is actually a positive
sure.
thing. Yeah, okay, very good. You have a new podcast as well. I love the premise of this podcast. I really enjoyed listening to it. You're reading the Thomas Hardy novel, Jude the Obscure, in its entirety.
That's right.
Why Thomas Hardy's Jude the Obscure?
Well, so the inspiration was twofold. One, unemployment. And and we had this book that my wife had as a college student called Jude the Obscure, which has been sitting on our bookshelf probably for 20 years. Unloved, unread. And at times when I have been reorganizing bookshelves, as I do during periods of unemployment, I've said to my wife, can we throw this out?
Sure.
And she will say, no, it's a classic.
Yes.
So I thought it would be funny to read the book out loud and comment on it as I go as a podcast. And I also thought as I was thinking that, oh, that's a terrible idea.
Which I'm sure made you more excited.
It made me more excited to do it. That's right.
I mean, this podcast is going to go till you finish the book.
That's
I
right. I think episode 35 came out this week. I'm about halfway done.
Yeah. It's going to be 70 to 75 episodes.
I think it will be, yeah.
Of your life.
Yeah, and of at least 10 or 12 other people's lives as well.
From the listener's point of view, what is the ultimate takeaway of this project?
Apparently, there's some dude doing all of James Joyce in a similar manner, which sounds interminable. So I guess the takeaway is, at least it's not that.
Right. It's a good takeaway. It's a good takeaway. All right. Michael, you ready for an Ask Me Another challenge?
Of course.
All right. Fantastic. That's right. So, Michael, your game is called Jude the Obscure Words.
Okay.
So, two of our producers and one intern skimmed through the text of Jude the Obscure, looking for the obscure words. So, I'm going to give you a word from the book.
Okay.
And three possible definitions, and you're going to tell me which one is correct.
Now, it's fair that a lot of times when I'm reading and I don't know a word, I'll just read it and skip right over it and not acknowledge that I don't know the meaning of the word.
Right.
Because I don't want to look foolish.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will acknowledge that I don't know the word and look it up.
That's right.
So some of these words I may know, most of them I probably will not.
Oh, yeah, and it's good-natured multiple choice. If you do well enough, listener Mitchell Schaub from West Bend, Wisconsin, will win and Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube.
How well is well enough? Just that I'm playing.
You're going to do well enough.
Okay, good.
Great. Okay. Is raillery A, jewelry for banisters, B, good-humored teasing, or C, impersonating a member of the nobility?
It's good-natured teasing.
It sure is. Yeah.
I just figured I would say it with confidence,
yeah.
And that way, if I was right, I would look really smart. And
maybe, yeah. Do you remember this? Is it, do I strike you as being learned, she asked, with a touch of raillery?
Don't remember that at all.
No, okay. What is a do-bit? A pre-breakfast breakfast. B, part of a rainbow, or C, a one-woman play performed in a damp meadow.
I want it to be a one-woman show performed in a damp meadow.
That's
sounds
where most
great,
of us start.
But I'm going to go with B.
A part of a rainbow?
Yeah.
It's actually even better than all that. It's a pre-breakfast breakfast.
I had no idea. How could it be a breakfast before breakfast? The definition of breakfast is that you're breaking the fast.
I totally feel like I'm on the podcast. What is a mullion? Is it A, savory seasoning for stew, B, part of a window, C, a haircut that's business in the front and onion in the back?
This is the only one that I have actually known.
Oh.
It is part of a window.
It is part of a window, yes.
That's a word still in usage, a mullion.
In this case, Jude is trying new jobs, and one of them involves windows,
yeah,
right?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just know it because we built a mansion in Connecticut, and we had to decide on mullions.
Like millions of mullions?
Millions of mullions.
Yeah.
And then we got it wrong, so we had a mulligan on the mullions.
Okay, this is one of my favorite. What is leer-upping hobbledehoy?
Oh, hobbledehoy.
Yes. Is it A, a slouching teenager, B, a bird enthusiast with a shady past, or C, a friendly greeting shouted while riding the back of a mule?
I think it's a slouching teenager.
Yeah, you think right once again.
I'm really good at this, you guys.
You're very good at this. This is your last clue. What is a somnambulist?
It's a sleepwalker.
A.
Oh.
One who's naturally gifted at gymnastics, B, a sleepwalker, or C, a sommelier for alarm clocks.
Do you think somnambulist, I'm yes. going to tie it back to an earlier portion of the show.
Please.
Do you think Aldous Huxley created Soma, the drug from
Absolutely.
Because it had the same, it's the same thing?
Absolutely.
Great callback, Michael. Thanks.
That was really amazing.
If you like callbacks like that, you're going to love Obscure.
That's right, and right, because you knew that word from life, or you knew that word from the book?
From life. I take a lot of Ambien.
Well, guess what? You did well enough. You did well
Thank
enough.
God.
Congratulations, Michael. You and Mitchell Schaub won Ask Me Another Rubik's Cubes.
Oh, great.
Michael's podcast is called Obscure. Give it up for Michael Ian Black.
Thanks.
Want our next special guest to play for you? Follow Ask Me Another on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Next up, a game called When Three Become Two. Don't worry, it's not another lecture about polyamory. It's a mashup game. Let's meet our contestants. First up, Rebecca Ferrer. You're a school counselor. That sounds like very gratifying work.
I enjoy it.
Okay, so what's one of the greatest compliments a student has ever paid you?
A couple weeks ago, a student came into my office and he goes, I want to tell you something, but I'm afraid it's going to come out weird. And I thought, very few things you could tell me could be weird at this point in
sure.
my career. And he goes, do you watch the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine? And I said, I love it. He goes, okay, you remind me of Amy Santiago. And I was like, what? And then I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, you're right. He goes, you never let me touch your good pens. And I was like, that sounds like something Amy would do. And she did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you have good pens.
You know, when you're in a school and you've got a good pen, you kind of want to hold on to
you
it until the
hang
ink
on to
runs
your good pen.
Out. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Rebecca, when you ring in, we'll hear this. Your opponent is Christopher Downs. You're a writer on the Australian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yes, I am.
So is there a big difference between the Australian version and the American show?
There is now. It was the same years ago, and they developed in the UK a half-hour every night format called Hot Seat. There are a lot of new rules.
What?
There are no lifelines, although there are now new lifelines, and you can pass, and it's a whole thing. I was working on the show for 3 months before I got all the rules down.
Right.
Yeah.
And the quiz questions, are they at all specific to Australian pop culture?
They are more specific to Australian pop culture. I only know this because I keep getting questions about America rejected.
Oh.
Because there is an assumption that I'm now too American. Which clearly I'm not. You can hear it.
Yeah.
But every time I write a question with anything in the Northern Hemisphere, they're like, no, he's gone to America now. No, we can't. Can you stick to Australia, please?
Right. More Kylie Minogue.
Yes. I'm at my limit of Kylie Minogue questions. I'm at capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christopher, when you ring in, we're going to hear this. Remember, Rebecca and Christopher, whoever has more points after two games will go to our final round. Let's go to your first game. This word game is called When Three Become Two. In each clue, you'll mash up a celebrity with a three-word name and a famous duo.
For example, if we said, after starring in Phantom Thread, this actor and his partner trekked across the country with Sacagawea, you would answer, Daniel Day, Lewis, and Clark.
The three-named actor will always come first, and the duo will always come second. Okay, here we go.
After she changed the game forever, this Battle of the Sexes tennis player went on to star in a Broadway musical about her relationship with the ruler of Thailand. Christopher.
Billie Jean King and I?
Yeah, that's right.
After he finished writing Infinite Jest, this author and his claymation dog took a rocket to the moon to get some cheese. Christopher.
Wallace and Gromit. Okay, wait. David Foster Wallace and Gromit.
Yes! Nice. I would love a claymation adaptation of Infinite Jest. Can you imagine the amount of clay that would take? So much clay. So long. You know this actor from Ed, Stella, and this episode of Ask Me Another. He's also one half of a power tool brand. Rebecca.
Michael Ian Black and Decker.
That is correct.
This Scottish man invented the telephone so that he could tell everyone about his favorite twee Scottish indie rock group. But that's just the consequence of sound. Christopher.
Alexander Graham Bell and Sebastian.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Actually, Alexander Graham Bell lived in Scotland, Canada, U.S., England. It's like the Potato People tour. But Scottish, there you go.
This is your last clue. He wrote America's national anthem, then teamed up with a comedian to play President Obama's anger translator. Rebecca.
Francis Scott Key and Peele.
You got it. That's right.
Oh, yes. That was great. Christopher is in the lead. Have you decoded the secret puzzle we embedded in the last five episodes of Ask Me Another? If so, I have some bad news. We did not actually embed a puzzle in the last five episodes. But the good news is that you should be a contestant on our show. Just go to amatickets.org. Coming up, relationship expert Esther Perel is going to explain everything that went wrong in every single one of our relationships. And then we can all ignore her and make the same mistakes again anyway. I'm Ophira Eisenberg, and this is Ask Me Another from NPR.
Support for this podcast comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Howdy, Texas. Dot your ribeyes and cross your sweet T's, because this September, Ask Me Another is coming to the Lone Star State. We're stopping in San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, and Austin, and bringing comedy, nerdy games, and trivia, plus special guests. You won't want to miss this. Tickets are on sale now at amatickets.org.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA. Every week, we bring you a mix of reporting, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues that impact our lives. Latino USA is one of a kind, featuring stories from the heart, stories that make you think and maybe even inspire you to action. Listen and subscribe now.
This is NPR's Ask Me Another. I'm Jonathan Colton. Now, here's your host, Ophira Eisenberg.
Thank you, Jonathan. Before the break, we met our contestants, Rebecca and Christopher. Rebecca, do you have a Valentine's Day tradition of any kind?
I do. My husband and I met when we were both in college, and our first Valentine's Day was, I had graduated, and he was doing a victory lap, and we ordered in Italian takeout, but we didn't really have any place to sit because he lived in a frat house. So we sat on the floor of his bedroom at the frat house, and that has now been our tradition. We order from the same Italian place, and we eat on the floor.
Of a different frat house every year.
Oh, no.
That'd be hilarious. Christopher, how about you? Do you have a Valentine's Day tradition?
Only one married Valentine's Day so far. It's just being real smug. Just being real smug and relaxed that it no longer stresses me out. I had 36 awfully stressful Valentine's days, and now they're all just chill.
Cool. Aww. I like it. Let's go to your next game. This is a music parody called Change of Heart. Many musicians have written about the heart giving other bodily organs short shrift. That ends today.
Finally, we rewrote songs with the word heart in the title to make them about other bodily organs. Ring in to identify the organ I'm singing about, and if you get that right, for a bonus point, you can identify the original song or the artist who made it famous.
Okay, Christopher, stay in the lead, and you are in the final round. Rebecca, you need to get more points, or you have to tell us which television show is better, The Resident or New Amsterdam. Thank you, Christopher.
All right, here we go.
The back of the abdomen is your place. YouTube bean-shaped things come in a pair just in case. Passing a stone and it's killing me, but it makes me think of you every time I pee.
Rebecca.
So, kidney.
Kidney is correct.
Yeah.
Not.
For bonus point, can you name the song of the artist?
So sorry. That's a no.
Okay. That's all right. That was Hungry Heart by Bruce Springsteen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Enzymes breaking down the food that I chew. Peristalsis gonna smush it on through. Esophagus, esophagus, the esophagus leads here. Ew.
Christopher.
Stomach.
Stomach is the answer, that's right.
Yeah.
Bonus point if you can name the song of the artist.
Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Yeah, that's right. Stevie Nicks, Tom Petty.
Yeah, nice one.
Detox my body. The portal vein brings you blood. Break down my fat and also the gin that I drank. Whoops, I drank too much gin. Metabolize. I need your better bile. Detox my body.
Christopher.
The liver.
The liver, that's right.
Toni Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
Yeah, that's right. Bonus point goes to you. Okay, here's your next one.
Air is drawn in through your bronchial tubes as you expand. CO2 goes out, O2 comes in to meet demand. Hey, wait, I got a little bit faint. Oh yeah, while I was singing, I forgot to breathe.
Christopher.
Lungs.
Lungs, that's right. Bonus point.
Heart-shaped box.
Yeah, that's right. Nirvana.
Now, a lung-shaped box is not as romantic, but it can hold more.
This is your last clue.
Once upon a time, I was living in you. Now you're all I'm thinking about. There's nothing I could do. Your contractions were forcing me out.
Rebecca.
It's cervix or uterus? Your contractions are forcing me out, right? Uterus?
Uterus is correct. That's right.
Oh.
Bonus point if you can name the song.
It's Total Eclipse of the Heart.
It sure is. Bonnie Tyler.
You guys are both fantastic. After two games, Christopher is moving on to the final round. Before the final round, it's time for us to play a game. This is Meet the Expert. So please welcome couples therapist and host of the podcast, Where Should We Begin? Esther Perel. Esther, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for agreeing to help me with my relationship live on stage.
No, you've already said that you're going to do exactly what you came in with doing, so...
That's right. I'm sure a lot of people say that, right?
Exactly. Because people come to tell me what's wrong with the other and I should fix their partner.
That's right.
It's a drop-off service.
You have this podcast, this is the third season that you've completed, called Where Should We Begin? These couples are having live counseling sessions with you. Does it take a little while for people to sort of disarm?
Look, people come they have been thinking about what they want to do there. They have something pressing that is troubling them that they would like to get help with.
Yeah.
I tell them, I'm also aware of the mic. I'm nervous. They're nervous. We're not here to make a performance. We're here to have a session.
Yeah.
And you forget about everything else. You just delve, you go into the trenches, and you do the work. And I think that this idea that you are altered, that you change the way you say because you feel that you're being watched,
yeah.
You know, you're often more watched by your inner critic than by anybody else.
That's right. Okay, Valentine's Day.
Yes.
I'm sure.
The annual day for you to take stock of the quality of your romantic investments.
It's like love Yom Kippur.
Well done.
All right. So that's part of what you think that Valentine's Day should be. It's not just about chocolate and flowers and this. We should all sit there and take stock privately?
Everybody
or?
Does. But everybody
do,
does.
You're right.
You sit there and you say, you know, how are we doing? Are we worth the chocolate? Is the state of our relationship sweet enough? Or is it bitter? Or is it, no, it's a fraud. It would be a farce. It would be lying in our own face. No, I'm not doing anything. You know, people are constantly thinking how much do they deserve the celebration of their relationship, which everybody else is cashing in on, of course. But it's a terrible pressure day. I actually changed it last year. I decided that instead of Valentine being about this one and only person, you should Valentine us all. And it should be a relationship day for the love of all. I think that would make the Valentine a lot more pleasant to a lot more people.
I think you're right. I really like that. I really like that. So Esther is going to lead a special Valentine's Day version of our game Guesstimators, where Jonathan and I do not know the answers to these questions that she's about to pose.
Yeah, we made them up for you.
All right, take it away, Esther.
So, according to the Pew Research, in 1960, 59% of adults age 18 to 29 were married. Mm-hmm. These days, what percentage of adults 18 to 29 are married?
Okay, so this is the United States, basically?
Yeah, this is US.
Does that count people who are divorced who were married, or is it people who have never been married?
In the 60s, about 60% of people were married in their early 20s. How many do you think today in their early 20s?
Got it.
This is... Yeah, whether they're married or not.
This sociological question does not deal with your ambivalence.
I feel like I'm having insight into your marriage, Jonathan.
I don't know what's happening. This therapy session is going terribly for me.
I feel like people are getting married later, but that's my experience and my experience of many of my friends. But I also live in New York, which I realize is not exactly an example of the entire country.
Yeah.
But I still think it's just generally lower.
It's more acceptable to live with a partner now than it was in those days. So I think people are sort of trying out cohabitation for
cohabitation.
Longer.
And you don't need to marry to have sex for the first time.
You don't have to get married to have sex.
Actually, you marry and you stop having sex with others.
I'm going to say, so 59, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to go for like half, 30%.
I feel like it's a little higher than that.
Okay, 40%? How do you feel about 40%? Okay, that's where we're going with, 40%.
20.
20%? Whoa! Nobody's getting married anymore between those ages.
Between those ages.
Everybody that may still will do it about 10 years later.
Yeah. Now marriage is more about just settling.
Settling down.
All right, let's go to question number two.
Question number two. Research generally indicates that men cheat more than women, but according to data from the National Opinion Research Center, by what percentage have female infidelity increased since the 1990s?
Okay, well, first of all, it's increased. Good to know that.
Why? Why do you think it has gone up?
Why has it gone up?
Mm-hmm.
We have more tools that allow us to connect with people.
And I would say maybe there's less expectation that the woman is tied to the home in some way.
Right.
The woman is out and about.
Less she has to put up with.
How much percent do you think? It's actually very interesting.
Yeah.
40%.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that's it.
40% higher.
But that's almost twice as many.
Yeah.
Almost twice as many.
But here's the thing. Number one, contraception. Before then, there is no ability to experience sexuality for women freely of the consequences. Second, divorce laws.
Right.
Third, economic independence of the women. So she's not so likely to be destitute, ostracized, etc. So all of that makes women more likely to behave like other people have behaved.
like men.
Like men. All right.
Want the last one?
Yeah, let's go to the last question.
So, according to a survey published by the website 538, what percentage of adults who live with their partners said that they sleep apart every night?
I don't know. I will never know. I will never have this option because I live in New York. So if I didn't want to sleep in the bed with my husband, I would have to sleep...
In the kitchen.
In the kitchen. Yeah. So what percentage of adults say they sleep apart?
14.
14? Not a lot.
No?
I feel like we've learned a lot from this. I feel like we've learned that we are kind of healthier in relationships, and also everyone's got to try harder.
So here's the thing. We have higher expectations for our relationships. I don't know if we have healthier, but we definitely have unprecedented expectations. So we're going to talk about Valentine, right? We want more and more and more from a party of two. And my friend Eli Finkel always says, you know, when you go climb the mountain, the view gets more and more beautiful, but the air gets thinner, and less people can get there. So the good relationships of today are often much better than the relationships in history. But not everybody gets there.
Hmm.
Why? Because most people, you know, bring the best of themselves elsewhere and not necessarily home.
Right. Everyone should just try to keep climbing. All right. All episodes of Esther's podcast, Where Should We Begin, will be available on Apple Podcasts soon. Everyone give it up for our expert, Esther Perel. It's time to crown our big winner. Let's bring back our finalist, Sarah Favinger, who doesn't need help with her double bass, and Christopher Downs, who is sick of writing trivia questions about Kylie Minogue. Sarah and Christopher, your final round is called Love is Love is Love is Love. Every answer contains the word love. And our big winner will receive an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube signed by Michael Ian Black. We rolled a 20-sided die backstage, and Sarah is going first. Here we go. Sarah, Julia Roberts starred in the film adaptation of this best-selling memoir by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Not a clue.
Eat, Pray, Love. Christopher, Peter Sellers plays multiple characters in this satirical dark comedy directed by Stanley Kubrick.
The Love Guru?
Sorry, is incorrect. We were looking for Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah, right. Yep.
Calm down, everybody. Calm down. It's going to be okay. Sarah, in 2013, a southeastern U.S. Commonwealth announced that this tourism slogan would start appearing on its license plates.
Virginia's for lovers.
That is correct. Christopher, Philadelphia is known by this nickname.
The City of Brotherly Love.
That is correct. Sarah, this Shakespeare comedy features the longest word in all of his canon, honorific abilitude in a tatted ibis.
Nope.
3 seconds. Looking for Love's Labor's Lost. Christopher, in 2014, this Utah representative became the first black Republican woman elected to Congress. She lost re-election in 2018. 3 seconds.
Jessica Love.
Mia Love was the answer we were looking for. Sarah, this singer-songwriter was one of the founders of the Beach Boys.
Love is also the surname.
3 seconds.
I don't have a first name.
We were looking for Mike Love. Christopher, this 2003 romantic comedy features a star-studded ensemble cast and 9 interweaving plots.
Love Actually.
That is correct. We're at the halfway point, and Christopher's in the lead, 2-1. Sarah, Nick Robinson stars in this 2018 film about two high school boys who fall in love over anonymous Gmails. 3 seconds.
Not a clue.
Love, Simon. Christopher, Dolly Parton wrote this song popularized by Whitney Houston.
I Will Always Love You.
That is correct. Sarah, Beyonce announced her first pregnancy at MTV's Video Music Awards after performing this song, which has four key changes.
Love on top.
That is correct. Christopher Gabriel Garcia Marquez wrote this novel, published in Spanish in 1985.
Nope.
We're looking for Love in the Time of Cholera. Sarah, this HBO series centers on a fundamentalist Mormon family.
Oh, God.
Big Love. All right, here's the deal. The score is 3-2. Christopher, if you get this right, you win. Patricia Heaton and Doris Roberts starred on this long-running CBS sitcom.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
That is correct. Well done. Thank you so much, Sarah. And congratulations, Christopher. And that's our show. Ask Me Another's house musician is Jonathan Colton.
Hey, my name anagrams to Thou Jolt a Cannon.
Our puzzles were written by Andrew Kane, Carol Lee, Julia Melfi, and senior writer Karen Lurie, with additional material by Emily Winter. Our senior supervising producer is Rachel Neal. Ask Me Another's produced by Mike Katzeff, Travis Larchuk, Kiara Powell, Nancy Seychow, Edward Wyckoff-Williams, Ramel Wood, and our intern, Sean Gohl, along with Steve Nelson and Anya Grunman. We're recorded by Damon Whittemore, Frank Bianco, and Jeff O'Neill. We'd like to thank our home in Brooklyn, New York, The Bell House.
Hot Heel Blues.
And our production partner, WNYC. I'm her ripe begonias.
Ophira Eisenberg.
And this was Ask Me Another from NPR. Hey, happy to hear you're still listening. And since you're still here, why not pop over to Apple Podcasts and write us a review? We love to hear from you, and it helps others find out about our show. For additional information about new episodes, upcoming live shows, road shows, and bonus games, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks. This is NPR. Next time on Ask Me Another, we're joined by one of Queer Eye's Fad Five, Anthony Perowski. He chats about being the famous foodie who changed his life and his new cookbook. Then we grill him in a game about books and check his corgi knowledge. So join me, Ophira Eisenberg, on NPR's Ask Me Another, the answer to life's funnier questions.